Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing well. I'm melting, but I'm doing well.
Yeah. Very. It's one of them really, really hard days.
Yeah. And this is also taking me away from my Starfield time. But apart from that, it's good.
There we go. Right. This is for season 3, episode 8, I See You. David, what did you think of this episode?
I really like this episode. I mean, it's sort of the aftermath of everything that happened last time. There are some really great moments in it. The cousin spotting Walt, I think, I've forgotten about that. And Jesse messing around in the lab. Obviously, you've got Giancarlo back in there in some very key scenes as well, and he's fantastic. And some sort of neurotic stuff from Walt as well, which was really quite good. There's a whole bunch of just really excellent stuff in this episode. And considering it isn't really full of action or anything, it's sort of the kind of next, you know, follow up from last week, but still some wonderful things in here.
I quite agree. It's another great episode, such as most of them are. In fact, we are coming up to an episode that is debated, but we will get there in due course. It's another great episode. It's one that pushes things along again. It's also another episode that, and Brian plays this so well as Walter, this kind of, and this happens in multiple occasions, but I don't remember it happening after a point where he sort of debatably breaks bad, this kind of silent, like, blame look that he gives, not towards someone, but a look on his face that he has, like when they're talking about what's going on with Hank and stuff, he knows there's like something going on. And he's got this kind of, this reflective, it's a great way that they play off, this kind of reflective, I can't say anything about this or what I might know about this, but this kind of like, I should take some responsibility, but it's brilliant the way that they sort of play that off. Jesse being in the episode and the whole Gale stuff was great. Giancarlo obviously as Gus
brilliant as always. A little appearance from Mike was brilliant. Yeah, there's lots of good stuff in this episode yet again. And like you said, with the crawling along the floor, there's some like horror elements going on there, which I really like as well. That also is one of those scenes at this point that you look at the... Because to me, if you look at Walt's reactions to certain stuff, not necessarily the way that he out and out behaves, but his looks and the way he reacts to things, you can tell if he has or hasn't broken bad yet. And I still don't think he has. There's a particular scene coming up of an episode I can think of where he's kind of a bit more gone at that point, but that's not coming up yet. But then the show isn't called Break Bad in the middle of the series, it's called Breaking Bad. So, yeah. But this episode's another really, really good one, as well as at, because obviously we've got lots of great characters right in this show, and they're all performed exceptionally well by the actors involved. But the main, obviously, core of the thrust of the show is what's going on with Walter and how he's breaking bad. And there's lots of moments in this episode particularly where he goes through like a range of different things, and it's interesting to see that kind of guy still there and trying to sort of almost fight that personality a bit. I thought it was very interesting, particularly in this episode, how that was played out. So that's some of our pre-thoughts on the episode. Just this little thing I wanted to mention to do with Aaron Paul, who of course plays Jesse Pinkman in the show. As many of you may know, there's strikes at the moment, lots and lots of different strikes. The one that we're talking about, obviously, is the writer's strike and all that sort of thing. One of the main reasons this is going on, from what I understand, is because of residuals due to streaming, because it hasn't been sorted out properly yet. Which is why this is happening. Aaron Paul did, I don't know if this was like an interview or a quote from like a speech he made or something, but there's like a little something that he said. Says Aaron Paul says he doesn't get anything for Breaking Bad from Netflix, despite the show's popularity on the platform. Says, quote, "I think these streamers know that they have been getting away with not paying people a fair wage, and now it's time to pony up." That source is from The Independent. There's probably other different sources out there and stuff, but it's a screenshot that I took, which is interesting because that's the obviously I think this is this show on American's Netflix, because that's how we watch it over here, obviously.
Yeah, I think it probably is now. I mean, it wasn't originally, but I think it probably is on Netflix everywhere now. But obviously internationally it is on Netflix. Part of an interview I think he did with Entertainment Tonight in Canada during a recent sort of
picture. I thought you were going to say Entertainment Talk. It's like I missed something.
Entertainment Tonight in Canada it was. They were interviewing people on the picket line and interviewed Aaron Paul as part of it. And that's, he came out with that statement. It's, because obviously the actors and the writers are all on strike, and the residuals, we've talked about this at length on the Geek Time Radio, but one of the way residuals work for streaming services at the moment is it is a percentage that the actor is hired for, if it's a show that's been made for the streaming service, it is a percentage the actor is hired for, in addition to how many subscribers that particular streaming service has.
Yeah.
So if a show is incredibly popular on the streaming service, but you're a relatively unknown star that wasn't hired for much to play that role. So, for example, One Piece, which is the show that's just launched on Netflix, the guy who's the lead in that will have got paid relatively little, probably, for being hired for that role. If that turns out into being one of the biggest shows on Netflix, or Squid Game, for example, which nobody realized was going to be a hit, they will have got paid peanuts for that by Netflix. So that is very wonky. And in addition to that, stuff that they buy in, they're not paying decent residuals on either, as Aaron Paul says. I mean, Breaking Bad was not made for Netflix, although we get it Netflix here. It was made for AMC. It was AMC, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
And for whatever reason, AMC, I'm assuming, got paid for having Breaking Bad on there, but the actors don't get paid for it being on there, which I don't know how that works, but apparently that is the case. So presumably the writers aren't getting paid either. And I mean, I would assume that's the same for the cast of Suits. I mean, Suits has been sitting in the top of the Netflix chart for the last 4 weeks. For some reason, it's going through this huge revival right now. Because it's on Netflix around the world, but it's also on Netflix in the US, and that's been going through a massive revival. And I would bet you anything that the actors on that show are not getting paid money from Netflix from that. Or if they are, it's going to be pennies or cents.
Yeah, such as we've seen from certain actors posting their checks and stuff of cents or something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the amount of money that they get paid in residuals for some of these shows, even if it is one of the biggest things on that streaming service, is less than probably what it costs to send them the check in the first place. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Because I know obviously we haven't talked about the strike on this because it hasn't. This is obviously an old show and stuff, but because that was to do with Breaking Bad and it was Aaron Paul saying it, I thought that we would bring it up. So.
Yeah.
I'm with Aaron in terms of, well, I've already said clearly before on a few different podcasts that, you know, there's people in higher up places who have caused this greed to happen and they don't want to budge. And people are fighting against that. And I think that's very good. By the way, you're also listening to a person talk who, I know this is a bit different, but it's more of a awareness thing. Of a Man United fan, which is run by someone called the Glazers. Like, I'm aware of how greed in this industry can work. So,
And you also just bear in mind, if you're thinking about, oh, actors whinging about, you know, from their mansions, whinging about the amount of money they're getting paid, for every Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston there is out there, there are 1,000 people that are background actors that are part of that union that are getting paid not enough money to actually live.
Yeah.
And that is the reason why they are striking. It's not for your Bryan Cranston and your Aaron Pauls. They're obviously supporting it, but it's for all the people that are part of that union, the 95% of people that make up that union, who are the background actors, who are the characters that you see, you know, wandering around in street scenes and you know, delivering packages or whatever, it, you know, all those people that fill out the world of the TV shows that you love. Those are the people that they're fighting for because they're the ones that are getting screwed over the most. So, that's why they are on strike. It's not for the people that own mansions. It's for the people that can't even are earning so little they can't even get their medical insurance covered.
All right. There's an update on that. I'll talk about this thing in a second. Right. Let's do some housekeeping. I need to change the right thing for there. There we go. We're ready to do that. Take a break and then come back, do the recap and all that thingamajig. We'll see you for that in a minute. All right, so just before I go through the actual recent content list, while this note is in front of me, just a reminder again that Classic Review Season 6 is done. It will be out later this year. And I mean, like, right at the very end of the year is sort of our, not specific Christmas content, but content for that point in the year, which is what we did last year, and I think probably the year before. It is Season 6, which means that if you're interested in listening to previous Classic Reviews episodes, which they're very different to, like, anything we do here on Entertainment Talk, and also the process is totally different. There is 5 seasons and a bonus season. That's just something that we've recently made and stuff, but it won't be out yet, but there's a whole bunch of it you can go and check out in the meantime. So if you want to get sort of caught up, if you want to call it that, there's 5 seasons and a bonus season for Classic Reviews, so check out that. But more recent stuff, over on the United cast, a very, very unlucky game. Man United lost 3-1 away to Arsenal in the Premier League, and there was multiple different interesting talking points in that game, particularly who we ended up with at centre-back and why, and who scored Arsenal's second goal and why, and all those sorts of things, and an offside goal, and should it have been offside? Did they ever show it at the proper angle? Who knows? But we went so close to winning that game, and then it ended up being 3-1. But that's football sometimes. That's unfortunately just what happens. Unfortunately now, I'd like Man United to get back out there and, you know, get back in the game, so to speak. But there's a lovely little international break right as the season has started. So there's no football. Well, there is football happening. The Premier League is back next weekend, which is a bit annoying. But there we go. with that. But I suppose in the meantime, you can enjoy Gareth Southgate's England if that's something that you want to do. So there's that. Over on Breaking Bad. Sorry, we didn't do a gaming talk last week, by the way. So I was feeling a bit like rough sort of on Friday. I was feeling fine for the Breaking Bad podcast we did. And like a few hours went past and I was like, I don't sort of feel right. Maybe it was the heat or something. And then I just said to Robert, we'll have to skip this week. So it will be back tomorrow. Got a planned show for Gaming Talk tomorrow. But that's an update on that. Of course, last week's episode, season 3, episode 7, for the 1 minute episode, we got coverage of that. Over on other podcasts, we've got the chat podcast for August 2023. Talked about a mental health update, Donald Trump, and some other stuff. I like the way I balanced that because it was sort of I could talk about the more serious stuff and then just sort of laugh at Trump for a bit. So it was it was well balanced. that mugshot. Anyway, that's a chat podcast. There's also podcast plan updates and, you know, that sort of stuff. So check that out if you want to. Over on the video game review side of things, I recently finished Oxenfree 2. And I gave that a don't skip rating, so you can check that out, a spoiler free section at the start. Did a podcast called The Future of Toy Story with a question mark posed as a question, and just talked about all of that, what Pixar could do, what I would like to see from the future of Toy Story, all those kinds of things. Obviously we've got Toy Story 5 on the way and all that kind of stuff, so that was a bit more of one of them kind of like passion project podcasts and that sort of stuff, so check that out if you'd like to. Over on the TV season review side of things, I recently watched Hijack season 1, the Idris Elba Apple TV Plus show. I very much enjoyed it, gave it a light must see. As for season 1, whether they can or will or whatever make a season 2, we don't know. That's season 1, it's very much worth watching. You enjoyed that, didn't you?
Yes,
Hijack.
Yeah. Right. So. I mean, I would like it to come back because I like the characters, but it's very much a self-contained thing. It's from the guys that did the Criminal series on Netflix, the one set in the interrogation room, which it was fantastic. It's the same guys that did that, and they did Litvinenko on ITV and a whole bunch of other things. But George K, I think the writer is, but it's absolutely superb.
Excellent. So that's a must-see review for that. That's got a spoiler-free section at the start if you want to check out that stuff. Over on the United cast, we beat Nottingham Forest by 3-2. We were somehow 2-0 down in the first 5 minutes and then pulled things back together. So good comeback. Good comeback story. So there was that. Over on Gaming Talk the week before, I talked about Little Nightmares 3 getting announced, which was a bit of a nice surprise. Call of Duty, there was some new gameplay and stuff like that, and that was the pre-release talk of Starfield, and there was all sorts of things about that.
No other game exists other than Starfield at this point.
Starfield and Baldur's Gate 3, yeah. So yeah. There's that, and that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. I almost said let's get into some news, but that's what I would say for Gaming Talk. Let's get into the recap. As Jesse Pinkman is leaving the hospital after Hank Schrader's attack on him, he sees Hank being admitted in critical condition with 4 gunshot wounds. Jesse smiles to himself as Skinny Pete picks him up, satisfied at the karmic justice. So that was our pre-credits cold opening for the episode. Both in bad shape. Obviously, Hank's in a much, much worse state. Obviously, this is following the attack in the previous episode. This opening makes sense, I suppose. You know, it's Hank getting admitted to the nearest hospital, I assume, and Jesse's on his way out. And given everything he said before when he was talking to Sol and Walt about him wanting to get, you know, what he said and what he wanted to have happen to Hank is still a lot worse than what is happening, but this is sort of satisfying for him.
Yeah.
This is a very interesting episode for Jesse as well, but we'll get through those bits as we get to them. It's a good way to kick off the episode. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's a great opening for this. I'd completely forgotten that was the opening for this, which I like. I like the fact that I don't remember some of this stuff. It's funny because every time I saw Aaron Paul in this episode, I couldn't help but think, because Jesse's got that eye shut throughout the whole thing pretty much. And, you know, whoever did the makeup did a wonderful job. But I did look at it thinking, poor Aaron Paul, his depth perception for like weeks around that shooting, that must have been like a nightmare, because he's had days on end where that eye's covered with like a patch of some description. So from the acting point of view, I imagine that was really tricky. But yeah, it's a great opening for the characters. And yeah, sort of, I mean, it is, as far as Jesse's concerned, karmic justice to see that Hank's been shot, and you know, there's no love lost between the pair of them, clearly. So yeah, I mean, this is a great sort of opening, and then of course leads on to Walt finding out, which is I'd forgotten that was the turn of events of how this happened, which is kind of nice.
But good way to kick off the episode. So there's that. Walter White tells a confused and upset Gale that they are not working well together, and he is being replaced. Jesse then shows up during the conversation, much to Walt's dismay, and displays his uncouth and unprofessional personality as he admires the lab, which confuses Gale even further, realizing that this is his replacement. Nevertheless, Walt and Gale shake hands and part ways on relatively amicable terms. While Victor reminds him to not fall behind on their weekly quota. There you go. Kind of feel... even within Gale's story, obviously we won't get into future spoilers and stuff. Gale's one of the more innocent... Within Breaking Bad, it depends on your term of... individual term of innocent. But
levels,
you know,
of innocent. He is still cooking gray
area
meth,
thing.
But yes.
So... it's the whole gray area thing. One of the more like innocent-ish, sympathetic kind of characters, and it's interesting looking back on their like the coffee scene, like, oh wow, why are we cooking meth, and how good their relationship seemed to be going. So I suppose, and this comes up a lot of times, obviously in Breaking Bad, is the fact that Walt has to lie to people a lot of times, because it's not because they're not getting on; it's because no, Jesse was my partner, he's in, you're out, and there can't be three of us because that would complicate things too much. I kind of forgotten a little bit about Victor's character. I know we saw him last time, which was the here's your cut thing at the traffic lights, and he'd given him that. But because he's kind of, well, Mike is kind of sort of Gus's right hand man, but so is Victor, kind of sort of. And they're both like, you know, take their roles obviously really seriously. So it was interesting to see this like four character dynamic of Victor letting Jesse in. Jesse's the one who's being all sort of flamboyant and everything. Gale's like, what's going on here? And then Walt's in this like awkward position of, I can't directly tell you to your face this guy's replacing you, because even though Gale won't get angry and like flip out, he's got to try to tell him in the most polite way. So it's kind of awkward for everybody, all right, apart from Jesse. He doesn't really care. But it's an interesting build up to the future scenes that we have in the super lab here. So it's another very good scene. You do kind of, again, yes, Gale is making meth, and that is morally questionable. Obviously, he's already talked about his own motivations, which I didn't remember, by the way, before. I know that scene was a couple of episodes ago, obviously linking to now. I hadn't originally remembered what Gale's motivations were, but then seeing him explain that and how that lines up with what his character is, was very interesting compared to obviously everybody else. So, what do you think of this scene?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. The way Walt is trying to sort of, you know, be really gentle and subtle, and he's kind of, you know, using that music analogy of sort of, you know, I'm classical, you're more jazz, and he's he's trying to be really kind of subtle about it, and then Jesse just bursts through the door, and he's, you know, I mean, I suppose if you were sticking with the music analogy, punk, maybe, I don't know, I mean, clearly not what Gale was expecting, and you could see the confusion on Gale's face, and you do feel really sorry for him, because he's just sort of, I mean, he looks at it and goes, this makes no sense, and he's right, I mean, it doesn't. Ultimately, I would be perfectly happy cooking with Gale and has fabricated the situation because he needs to keep Jesse close. Otherwise, Jesse's going to spin off and cause all sorts of problems. But he also doesn't want Jesse getting a bullet to the head, which is the alternative. So, you know, this is really the only solution Walt has at this point, is to keep him close. And the way Jesse comes around is the lab one is going, hey, look at everything shiny up in here and all that sort of stuff. It's just, it's so funny.
And it's like, Aaron, it's the complete opposite to Gale, isn't it? Like,
yeah, just the polar opposite. And he plays it so, so well. You know, intellectually, Gale and Walt are completely on the same level, quite clearly. And then, you know, and also later on, Gale gets, he's getting the blame for having screwed things up, and that's what Walter uses him as an excuse. And you do feel kind of sorry for Gale. I mean, yeah, the guy is there cooking meth, you know, I mean, he's no like angel, but he is, like you say, on Breaking Bad levels of innocence, he is one of the more innocent characters.
Yeah.
So yeah, you do feel sorry for him.
It was funny as well, because now that you reminded me of when he's talking about classic music and stuff, you almost half expected Gale to turn around and be like, is this classic music or something? Like the way, because he's like, oh, I need more jazz or whatever he says. Which, like you said, intellectually and all that sort of thing, him and Gale were very much in sync. Like the, oh, you know, why are we cooking meth? Why don't we cook coffee? And it's that kind of, and they're roughly like this, sort of the same age and that kind of stuff, and Jesse just comes in. It's brilliant. What happens after that? Jesse informs Walt about Hank's condition. Walt immediately leaves for the hospital. Walt catches up with his family while Steve Gomez and George Marquette explain to him that two cartel hitmen, Lionel and Marco, made an attempt on Hank's life. Gomez expresses astonishment that Hank was able to take down both the assassins without his gun, and this prompts Marie to ask a question as to why did Hank not have his gun on him. Marquette explains that Hank had to turn it in following his suspension due to the assault on Jesse. Marie lashes out at them both, blaming them for leaving Hank defenseless and not backing him up. When he needed them the most. She also pins a bit of blame on Walt, believing that Hank would never have crossed paths with Jesse if Walt had not brought marijuana. Yeah, because that's what's going on from him.
Yeah,
that's a bit of a callback to early season 2, late season 1. I can't remember when that started coming up.
I think it's season 1, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. There was like a bit where Walt kind of got caught out and he had to come up with that, didn't he? So, this is kind of the first of those few scenes where I mentioned that sort of, what could you nickname it? Like silent guilt, almost. That they're having this conversation. Walt's kind of standing a bit off to the side. He kind of puts the pieces together in this episode as to like what's going on and why Hank is in the position he's in. And like the hitmen and all that kind of thing. And obviously, you know, the DEA involvement and stuff. And he's got that kind of like, he can't say anything about what's going on. He can't even really reply to Marie necessarily. All he can sort of say is like, I'm innocent and I'm sorry. So it makes it awkward, which is part of the interesting challenge for Walt's character, which again is one of the main thrusts of the whole series, is seeing how these events affect him and break him bad. And this was kind of one of them as well. So very, very good stuff. But see, there's kind of a bit of a, you can completely understand where Marie's coming from, which is like, okay, you suspended him and he got attacked, but obviously this is America, guns and all that kind of thing. You suspended him, which you had to do because of the assault, which links back to Walt, but they don't quite know that. But then they think there's the marijuana thing. So that's the pieces that Marie's trying to put together. So she's blaming all three of them, which she has the right to do, because that's what she thinks is going on. And then the whole idea of like Hank had to have his gun taken away, so that protection from him is gone. Then on the DEA side, they kind of had to do that, and Hank accepted it very willingly. Like, he didn't put up any sort of fight. He did stand up and say like, "No, I did do this," and he gave his gun over. So it was just, I would maybe call it like unlucky timing on that part, because if Leonel and, what's the name, Marco, the cousins, if they come after Hank slightly earlier. Maybe Hank has his gun on him, so maybe that goes a bit differently, but then it's just, it's what ended up happening. So, but no, it's interesting to see, again, we've made comments about Marie and stuff and her character and how that was, like, not the character herself, but, like, obviously how she was written and stuff, is one of Breaking Bad's only if few mistakes. It was good to see her, let's say, getting her teeth into a scene a bit more.
Yeah.
Here. So that was good as well. So
yeah,
because there's nothing fundamentally wrong with the character of Marie or the actress. It's just obviously what goes on with the character. But we've been down that road before.
Yeah.
So it was good to see her get a bit more involvement in this, I think, as well. So what do you think of this scene?
Yeah, it's a great scene because I mean, you know, Marie quite rightly, as they point out, she's looking for somebody to blame because her husband's in the hospital. They don't know whether he's going to pull through, and yeah, she's looking to lash out at people, and there is an argument for what for what she's saying. I mean, it is right that had Jesse not come into their lives, then Hank might not be chasing that down. I mean, we know that isn't the reason that it happened. You know, it's related to him taking down Tuco. I mean, that's what it's actually relating to. But yeah, again, Hank might not be involved in taking down Tuco had Walt not been involved with Tuco in the first place. So, I mean, you know, there's, and you're right, from the DEA side, they absolutely did what they had to do. It's, you know, you can't leave the guy with his gun, and there was no way they could have ever predicted that these guys were going to come after him. So, you know, the whole thing, she's just lashing out and looking for somebody to blame. But it is nice to see her actually get some sort of slightly more meaty scenes in this. I mean, I think this is probably the most she's had to work with so far, I think, on the show. So, yeah, it's nice to see her being able to stretch her legs a bit with this. And it's played really well. And, you know, we'll be seeing all of them as well, because, you know, the other two sort of back down and walk away. They don't try to defend it or anything. And, you know, they understand what the situation is. And you're right with Walt as well. The look that Brian's playing it with, there's a lot of that sort of very subtle, hang on, how much of this is my fault? You know, have I caused this? Have I put my brother-in-law in hospital indirectly? You know, there's a lot of that you can tell going through his head, just by the way he's looking in these episodes. So it's really, really well played.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, another good scene. Lionel, now with his legs amputated, is being treated in the same hospital as Hank. When Gomez and Walt go to view him from the other side of the door, obviously there's loads of people there, he's not going to be able to do anything, other side of the door, Lionel recognizes Walt, and angrily, just with every ounce of strength that he's got, pulls all this machinery off him and all this kind of, all the, you know, bits and pieces of him, crawls towards him before eventually being hoisted back into his bed by police. Walt is startled and realizes that he might have been their intended target. This is one of the best scenes in the episode, certainly. And I sort of remembered this. I know this sounds a bit, this doesn't quite make sense. I sort of remembered the scene existed as it started happening, but I didn't remember it before it came up.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was like, sort of, this scene. But I was, there's certain episodes we've watched where I thought, oh, I can't wait for this scene to come up. Or like last time with the car park scene, you're waiting for that kind of one.
Yeah.
I didn't remember that this happened at all. So that was pretty great. Very much kind of, because Breaking Bad hasn't really done like anything, not even thematically or visually, anything horror related. There's been like tense scenes where people are trying to shoot each other, but that's not really horror or anything like that. Like this whole the double leg amputated thing, and he's using all of his strength, and he doesn't care at all, and I'm gonna get off this bed, I'm gonna crawl towards Walter White, Heisenberg as he would know him as, and just I mean, I assume the end game here is try to get this door open. I don't know if the door's actually locked or not, or whatever, and then just attack him in whatever way he can.
Yeah, I mean,
So,
I don't think there really was much of a plan going through his head
right,
other
just
than
I'm going for you. Yeah.
pure rage of you know, that's the guy that we wanted. He stood right in front of me. I've lost my legs. I've lost my brother. And just launches himself at him, basically. I mean, it's a phenomenally creepy scene, just because of the way he does it and the fact that they're all just stood looking at him going, what the hell is going on?
Right.
And it's, I think it's that, you know, they don't immediately sort of all rush in to stop him. They're just kind of all a bit dumbstruck. And the look of horror on Walt's face of like, oh crap, maybe I was what they were going after. Which also feeds into the hang on, were they going after me when they took after Hank? I'm sure that must be going through his head. I mean, yeah, there's it's just a really creepy, wonderful scene from them.
It's also an episode you can tell that, okay, yes, he's breaking bad. He obviously hasn't broken bad yet. Because when you get scenes like the silent guilt type scenes that I've talked about, and also his look here, like if he had broken bad and was, well, like, let's call it later show Heisenberg, he would not have had this shocked look on his face. So it's cool to still see that and still have that development
Yeah,
going on.
he's still Walt at this point, definitely.
Yeah, he's got his Heisenberg moment, certainly, but that's what makes it so great. So that was just brilliant. Gus receives a call from Juan Bolsa. The attempted hit on the DEA agent has prompted the Mexican government to track down, sorry, to crack down on the cartel and for the border to be monitored more with more scrutiny, forcing him to lie low in Mexico. Bolsa is suspicious that Gus was the one who orchestrated the hit, as Marco and Lionel would not have acted on their own. He tells Gus that he intends to get the truth from Lionel, who as to who permitted the attack. Yeah, it's not going to go very well for you because, again, I don't know which one of these is which, but they're both going to be dead. So, actually, it is Lionel's the one on the hospital bed because he've
Because
just, yeah.
Marco was dead at the scene, and then Lionel's the ones that's still alive with no legs.
Again, Giancarlo Esposito, it's just brilliant. Even the more quieter sort of casual stuff. Obviously, there's like a later phone call. Obviously, again, I think from the same seat that he's sitting in, with Walt, and it's the way Giancarlo just handles dialogue, whether it's more intricately written or things that are more basic or whatever it is. And it's like his mannerisms and it's just everything, really. So, yeah, like my sort of personal stakes on Juan as a character, obviously, I'm not really bothered by him, but it's obviously more about the bigger picture thing with the hit and Gus's involvement and stuff. So it's was still a really good scene, but it's ultimately building up to the final scene of the episode. So, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's great, and it's when you start to realize all the cogs that Gus and how clever Gus has been setting this up. Because, you know, we said before that, you know, he needs to protect Walt because he needs Walt to cook for him. So he gives the cousins the go ahead to go after Hank, knowing full well that, I mean, he doesn't really care if they kill a DEA agent, so what? It doesn't necessarily trace, I mean, he's kind of insulated, so it doesn't necessarily trace back to him. And the DEA are going to assume that that order has come from the boss of the cartel that they work for, which isn't Gus, it's Bolsa. So Gus is like, you know, set this up in a brilliant way of being able to expand his territory, because he knows that if it goes right and they just kill the DEA agent and get away with it, he gets rid of, you know, he's got rid of a potential enemy because the DEA come down on Bolsa. If it goes wrong, the cousins get killed, and he just goes, well, you know, stupid them for going after the DEA. I didn't, you know, why did they do that? You know, So, ultimately, the ultimate goal of, and even again, even if they'd been, I mean, I suppose they were unsuccessful, but even if they'd kind of even been less successful and, you know, Hank had just killed them, it probably would have rained back down on Bolsa as well. So ultimately, it was a very clever move by Gus to eliminate the competition. And it's an opportunistic thing that he did, but it was very, very cleverly planned, and in as things are when it comes to Gus, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Walt spends the next few days at the hospital while Jesse remains at the lab, waiting for him to return so they can resume cooking to meet their quota. Walt eventually receives a call from Gus to check in on their progress, not wanting to give any information that might reveal that his brother is in... brother-in-law is a DEA agent. Walt lies about why they're falling behind, saying that Gale has sent them set them back significantly. And to make up for it, he promises to produce 400 pounds, 180 kilograms, kg, of meth by next week. And Gus agrees to this, even though he knows Walt is lying. But then we will figure all that out later. I had to mention it as well. There's also a scene sort of within the hospital waiting of the table not being steady. And it's just, it's one of them little touches. Like, because he goes to pick up a book from this table and realizes it's wobbly. Like, nobody else there cares. I think it's Walt Jr., Skylar, and Marie. They're all sitting there, right? And I think the baby is as well. Probably is. And he like rips out like a already ripped page, folds it, and he like sorts it all out. And it does do the job, but it's just, it was one of them just little scenes that I just found kind of a little bit interesting in within the episode, of like there's already so much stuff going on in this guy's life, like literally with everything that's going on, but there's this one problem he can fix, which is trying to make this, like, it's not really relevant to anything, it's not going to help with anything, but just this little kind of, I want to make this table sturdy, and he does it, and you can tell he just gets this like little satisfaction from it. I thought that was a great little touch. It's very interesting across the series, his relationship or partnership with Gus, because for Gus at the end of the day, it's just he wants that Heisenberg blue crystal, and you know, he's just giving him the keys and stuff to the super lab, and he's not going to like kick him out yet and stuff. And obviously he's got the plan to show up later. Walt doesn't know about that. And there's the whole DEA thing, trying to keep that a secret. And again, the way Gus handles it, just like he's handled the phone call just now with Juan Bolsa, just really great. Again, like you kind of said, and you can see it throughout this episode, the way certain cogs and things are turning and lining up, and how you've almost got like this not butterfly effect, what do you call it when there's like different things lining up with each other, that kind of thing. So and this is kind of another one of those, so it's really great. Any comments on like the table stuff there with Walt?
It is one of those things that pops up a few different times in a few different episodes. Walt's sort of obsessive attention to detail, particularly when he's stressed about stuff. You know, there's a point with sort of rot, I think, in their house where he obsesses over sort of pulling things out. And even the episodes, the notorious episode that is coming up fairly soon, you know, that is another obsessive sort of detail. It's something that Walt does. There's a sort of compulsion when he's stressed of I need to fix something. I need to try and even if it's a sort of minor or possibly even non-existent problem, he will manufacture something to fix because it makes him feel like he's in a certain amount of control. I think one other point as well, since we're sort of talking about the Gus obviously knowing about the DEA agent stuff and all that, The title of this episode, which is I See You, is extremely clever because you are talking about, like, the reason it's called I See You is a play on words to do with the fact that both Hank and the cousin end up in the intensive care unit, which are known as ICUs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then you also have the scene of the cousin who sees Heisenberg and goes after him when he jumps out of the bed. You've also got, I think, arguably Gus seeing Walt and sort of seeing through him as well. So there are sort of multiple levels to the title of it. And I think I love how they name some of these episodes because they've done that so cleverly. You know, we've had them giving away hints to the plane crash in the previous season and stuff as well. But I just think that they've, I mean, it shows you the quality of the writing on this show when little things like that even are sort of part of it. It's just very, very clever.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's good stuff. Walt is horrified when Gus suddenly shows up at the hospital bringing free food from Los Pollos Hermanos. That's probably the best I've ever said that. As a show of his support for the DEA, Gus meets the rest of Walt's family and relates to the time when he first met Hank, revealing to Walt that Gus already knew that his brother-in-law was in the DEA. Walt speaks privately with Gus, assuring him that Hank is not a problem for their business. I think he is or was or still will be, but anyway. Gus subtly tells him that Leonel will not be a problem anymore. As he leaves, Leonel suddenly goes into cardiac arrest and dies. Mike is then shown disposing of a syringe as a very, very quick blink and you miss it scene. Syringe and leaving unnoticed. The whole appearance of Gus, a distraction for him to do his job. And Gomi celebrates, as do probably some of the other DE agents that are there as well. Yeah, lots of interesting stuff in here. Like you said, with this is kind of Gus seeing Walter White, the attempted family man, for kind of the first time. This is where he can't use that Heisenberg sort of mask, or it depends which one you think is the mask at this point, but he's obviously using his family man mask at this point. But then Gus is also using a mask as well. He is using the kind of, I was going to say friendly chicken man, that's not the right way to put it, the friendly businessman, the friendly kind of, no, I'm just here for support, I'm totally not doing, I totally don't have a super lab that I'm
totally
that
not my, responsible my for team. Everything that you're here for. Yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah, I'm not involved with any of that at all. But then as we've seen in these scenes with Gus and even previous ones, there's no reason at all to suspect him. I remember there was a scene, I think it was in season 2 somewhere. I don't think it was in season 1, that's a bit early. In season 2, actually, has it come up yet? I don't know if it's come up yet. A scene where he's talking to somebody else about something. I'm trying to think if it's actually come up yet. Where he's talking to somebody about the things that are going on and he just comes across as this nice, as this character. Which is very, very cool. I can remember the scene that I'm talking about, but I don't actually think that's come up yet. So I won't, not that it's like massively spoilery compared to all the big stuff, but still. So that should come up soon. So that was brilliant. And then, yeah, I guess seeing Gus and Walt in this totally different environment, you know, they're not talking about what quota to me or discussing deals and stuff. This is purely about him being there to support the DEA, and he kind of explained his reason a bit more, which was kind of, they put away these really nasty people, and I want to help and support with that in whichever way I can, which is, that's cool and interesting. One of the interesting parts about that, though, is he's an owner of a chicken shop restaurant. That's all that they know about him. He's a friendly guy who comes across really, really friendly. Again, Giancarlo's acting really helps with that. But he kind of, because he has the interest in the DEA stopping people, and that's what he's telling them. Obviously, we know there's other things going on. He's like smartly weaved in a way of kind of, oh, I can offer the free food. That's how I can kind of help. I've not really, as far as they're all concerned, all the other people are concerned, he's not got any sort of other connection or thing to offer or anything. He just, he's the guy who has access to a lot of food because he runs the shop. or runs the whole business pretty much, and wants to help put bad people away. At least that's what he's telling them. And I just think it's very, very smartly put into this episode, or into the whole story, really. So, what else is there? Yeah, the Mike thing, him doing that was quite cool as well. We haven't seen a ton of Mike, but we will do, obviously, as the series goes on. But I think the main point here is the Gus and Walt thing going on. Did we talk about Gus tells him suddenly? Yeah, there's a bit where it was kind of a cool little line that Gus gives. What was it that he said? It was like, oh yeah, put on. He kind of in his own like language, you could call it. It's almost like when he's kind of saying to Walt, like, hey, put your mask back on, kind of shake my hand and like. Yeah. Thank me or whatever, almost as like, hey, put this mask back on, let's not make this interaction look suspicious. And even what's so interesting about that, even though there's people everywhere, like people aren't really looking at these two, but he still wants to be 100% careful.
Yeah.
And him kind of saying to Walt in his own way, and in a way that Walt kind of recognizes, like, put your mask back on, shake my hand, just pretend that we've just had a polite conversation and I'm just going to walk away, I thought was a really cool touch as well, and also something that I didn't remember. So lots of great stuff here. What did you think of these scenes?
Yeah, it's a brilliant scene between the pair of them. Because, I mean, you know, Walt is clearly trying to hold it together and very uncomfortable with the fact that Gus has shown up. You're right. I mean, Gus is, it's sort of, you know, keep your enemies close kind of approach that Gus has taken to this. Because, as you say, there is no reason really to suspect him, and there is no real reason for him necessarily to get involved in any way. But by doing this, he ingratiates himself with sort of being friendly with the DEA. And I mean, they talk about the fact that he sponsored, it was either a fun run or a, you know, something like that. You know, there was an event where he met Hank. And, you know, he talks about this, and it's a way of him having sort of some knowledge of the people at the DEA without, you know, because the DEA don't really advertise necessarily who their agents are particularly, because they want to be careful about that. Uh-huh. And it sort of makes a certain amount of sense for the character of Gus, the chicken shop owner, as well, because he's clearly from South America. And he has come to the, you know, if you think of him just as a chicken shop owner, he's a South American who's come to America and has made this successful business. And the, you know, a lot of the drugs are coming over from South America, and he wants to support them in, you know, tidying up his homeland in a certain event. So from the logical point of view, it does actually make sense that he would want to help the DEA. You know, there is a believable character reason for that. So yeah, and this, the interaction between him and Walt, where he sort of says, you know, I hide in plain sight the same as you, and I think that's one of the things that
that's what he said. Yeah, that's the dialogue I was trying to remember.
Yeah, that's one of the things that he that just connects them. And it's interesting. I mean, what, like you said, when he took that phone call from Walt, he just obviously knew that Walt was lying, and then turns up, you know, and does all this at the hospital. And you do wonder whether Gus has got, I mean, you know, yes, he wants his meth, but whether there is a certain amount of, well, I did kind of get his brother-in-law like almost murdered, maybe I deserve to give him a little bit of a break, you know. So it's like the sort of, okay, you can deliver £400 next week, you know, and lets him kind of slide a little bit. Whereas I don't think normally that would be the case, but I think maybe there is a certain amount of just going, well, you know, I do sort of understand the situation, even though you can see he's slightly annoyed by it, but I think there may be a certain amount of that going on as well. I mean, kind of, well, yeah, okay, fair enough. So, yeah, and then that little shot of Mike, of, I mean, it's literally, like you say, blinking, you miss it, yeah, of you just putting the thing in the sharp object bin and, like, disappearing, and that's literally all you see of him, I thought was lovely, you know, just to round that off.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. One other aspect I like within this, sort of, like, the end of the episode from Lionel dying to the end of it, is everyone sort of gets panicked all of a sudden. Everyone goes upstairs, like rushes upstairs. And what's interesting is looking at, obviously, when Walt is Heisenberg later on, and the aspect of control, not just within himself, but in a lot of different areas, he has no real idea of sort of, he's not in control of the situation at all. He's not really aware of what's going on. And but Gus is the one that is. Gus is the one that's who's like arranged all this kind of stuff, and he's helping out, and obviously called Mike to, you know, go and sort out the situation. But because there's two instances of that in this episode where, like, Lionel crawls towards him. Obviously, he might not have been expecting that, but he didn't know anything about it anyway, and is horrified and doesn't know what to do and is not in control of the situation. And then later on, like I mentioned, everyone starts panicking. He doesn't even know why everybody's panicking. And then everyone's rushing upstairs. He doesn't know whether he's going to go with them, stay there, or what he's going to do. And then you link it up with this scene later on where Gus has sort of like dealt with everything, and they're having this little exchange. Yeah, it's another interesting little nugget with Walter's character. So that was cool. But, oh yes, that's not the end of the episode, is it? Later that night, Gus receives another call from Bolsa, whose house is now surrounded by Mexican federales due to Gus tipping them off to his location. With Lionel now dead, Bolsa is convinced that Gus is behind all this, and he vows that the cartel will seek retaliation against him, but is interrupted by the federales. Two dogs are talking to each other. All right. Is interrupted by the federales. His bodyguards investigate and are brought down by gunfire. As Bolsa attempts to escape, he is met by two agents and is shot to death. I did not remember this scene, really.
No, I didn't. Yeah.
In fact, because when it comes to like Breaking Bad characters and me remembering what happens to them, Bolsa's probably like near the bottom of that list, honestly. Like, there's characters coming up who we've not even met yet who are more sort of in my mind. It doesn't make this scene worse. I'm just talking about Juan Bolsa's character. So, but because I was like, oh, okay, he's being surrounded. He's talking to Gus about it and everything. And I was like, okay, what's like gonna kind of... And it's so weird because this is, I think I said this is my third time through, and there's even certain like ends of episodes and stuff like this one. I'm like, okay, what's about to happen to one here? Yeah. And so that was interesting. But yeah, Gus has taken care of him, and that's pretty much that.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on the end of the episode here?
No, I mean, it just, again, shows sort of Gus's genius of how he set all this up. Of, you know, direct, all he had to do, you know, solve the problem of the cousins demanding to kill Walt. He sends them after the DEA instead, knowing that and sort of figuring out that whatever happens with the DEA, that's likely to go back to Bolsa, and then he can blame it all on Bolsa. And as long as the cousins are dead, then he's golden, because he can pay off the right agents in you know, wherever Bolsa is, Mexico, I'm assuming it is, yes. And then he can just pay off the right people in Mexico and drop the right tip. And also, I mean, even if he's not paid them off, all he needs to do is tip them off, because the DEA at that point are going to be on top of the Mexican federales, saying, you know, these guys went after our guys, you need to deal with them, here's where they are. So even if he's, as he was saying, you know, my brother-in-law's the police chief or whatever it was that he was saying on the phone, that's not going to protect you from the federal police in Mexico when the DEA is breathing down the neck and asking for heads. So yeah, I mean, it was brilliantly played by Gus. It's a really, really neat way of tying everything up, and not only sorting out one problem, which is these guys wanting to kill Walt, but also taking out the competition at the same time. It's a just mastery piece of work from Gus. Really clever. So, yeah, I mean, Scary but brilliant, that man. Yes.
Definitely. That's the end of the episode. We do have a couple of bits of excuse me, feedback to get to. If you'd like to write in about the show, whether you have seen it, haven't, your 10th time through, however many time throughs, Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter, eTalkUK. And there's information in your show notes. Barry writes in and says, I'm not sure what you both think of this, but do you think Jesse is underserved as a character? This is my first time through. So what was I thinking on my first time through up to this point? Because I'm trying to put myself in Barry's shoes here, of Jesse as a character. Walt's still the main character. Gus very much has imposed himself. Obviously, Gus wasn't there since the pilot. I think it's a bit more of not necessarily underserviced because things have happened to him and like he's had good character development and stuff. It's not been nice things that have happened to him, but he's had character development. He does come into his own more and more as the series goes on. There's some scenes that I'm remembering now with Jesse where he kind of becomes even more of his own character, that if that kind of makes sense. But yeah, it's good. You got to remember as well, this is something I was just thinking of. And this, I think there was a little nugget of information with the whole strikes thing that, if you remember, Jesse wasn't supposed to survive the first season, which is
Yeah, no,
very
he wasn't.
interesting looking back at things now. I think it was because of the popularity of him or something,
It was
and they kept him on.
it wasn't a public popularity. It was literally the fact that
Oh, did.
they did the first season and Vince Gilligan liked Aaron Paul's
That was it, yeah.
portrayal of it so much that he was like, I think we can do more with this character with what Aaron's done with it. But yeah, he was supposed to be killed. There was a character called Nodos in the that he's killed, who was one of Tuco's lieutenants, who kind of was irritating and bugged him all the time. Who ends up, and he was supposed to be Aaron. It was supposed to be Jesse that got killed at that point, and they switched the characters out. But ultimately, he ends up serving as a sort of almost counterweight to Walt, because you've got Walt is Walt's the interesting idea of the fact that you're taking somebody who is generally a morally decent human being and his descent into becoming, into Breaking Bad and becoming this dealer, whereas Jesse is sort of the opposite end of that scale of being somebody who's involved in drugs and he's trying to climb his way out of it, which is a far more traditional sort of track of what you would probably follow for a TV show. But when you shove them together, it actually works as a sort of counterweight to Walt. And I think that works really, really, really well. So, yeah. I mean, I think if you're thinking that he might have been a bit underserved, I think that's possibly why, because the original plan, wasn't really for Jesse to be there. But I mean, as you get further into it, I think he's had quite a lot to do, and I mean, and as you say, it isn't directly Jesse's story, it's Walt's story. And I mean, at the end of the day, Jesse was the one that got his own film afterwards. So, I think they certainly, as you get further into it, he gets balanced out more. But ultimately, it is Walt's story, so he's always going to be the main character.
There you go. Abed writes in and says, I think it's a shame to see the cousins go. They're both very compelling characters. Do we see any other new characters introduced before the end of the show? Yes, we do.
Yes, quite a lot.
There is, I'm not going to say their names, there's one, two, three, four, at least four quite major characters. One of them's got a smaller but still very impactful role. Four that I can think of. That I can't remember when they actually come into the show, or I don't, they've not had any scenes yet. And then there's like a group or something like that as well. I'm trying to think again how I felt when I first watched it in the cousins. died. First of all, I was a bit shocked, obviously, because the scene itself is very shocking. And Hank almost died himself. I as I've not necessarily as I've gotten older, as I've seen more characters that have kind of got a mystique and a mystery to them, so like Mandalorian, mostly these days characters that have got masks that you're trying to read the emotions of, so people like Mandalorian and characters that talk a little bit less and stuff like that, that have sort of more mystery to them, can be very, very compelling in their own way. Obviously, that's where the cousins fit in because they obviously you can see their faces, but they don't talk that much. And also, even with sort of their, let's call it facial expression acting and that, which obviously with the Mandalorian is extremely limited because it's just sort of head tilts and things like that. Can be very compelling in its own interesting way. I mean, you've got Gus in the show, and he kind of carries it from there. I don't remember sort of. Let's say the next couple of episodes, I don't remember sort of missing the cousins or thinking, oh, like the show's got that missing aspect because it just moved on so well anyway, and it just continued the development of Walt and Gus's partnership, or whatever you would choose to call that, and that just gets well, the whole show just keeps getting better anyway, but that just gets better and better. But yeah, I even when I got to like the next season and the final season, the fifth and final season, I don't remember missing them. But I can see why you would maybe say that it's, you know, sometimes we do lose interesting characters in shows, but then they die for reasons that are justifiable and make sense. Because like, if Hank, let's say Hank manages to drive away in that scene and not get injured or not injure anybody, but just drives away, which is probably what he should have actually done, but obviously he was too panicked. Then he would just keep chasing them, and although that was very, very interesting, I don't know how long you could keep doing that for. But then they died at a point they were supposed to, and it continued from there. So, what do you think of the cousins?
Yeah, I mean they were great characters. I think they were characters that were going to have to go at some point to move the story on, because you couldn't have them hanging around over there, over the heads of Walt and Jesse. I think you couldn't just send them back to Mexico and then have them pop up again, because there'd always be that worry that they're coming back. And I think so. I think how they were utilized was really quite good. I mean, they were only in this season. They didn't show up anywhere else. And there are a string of interesting characters that come up moving forward as well. So, yeah, I mean, the story has to evolve and move on. And whilst they were great characters and they were wonderfully played and they were weird and creepy and just brilliantly done, no, I have no issue with the fact that they were killed off, and you move on. It's so well constructed, this show. They were great. They were there for a purpose. They served that purpose, and now we move on to other people.
Lastly, Caroline writes in again, says thanks very much for your response. My husband and I both laughed. If you remember that Everton thing from last week, that was pretty funny. They finally got a couple of points as well, so good luck to them. Although they've lost Damari Gray to Saudi, which is a shame. Two follow-up questions: has any punishment for City been done? And you mentioned remembering Ted's final scene, but not if he gets caught. Do you remember if his final scene involves him getting caught? I don't think we should mention anything really about his
No.
final scene particularly. Like I said before, I can remember what his final scene is, but I can't remember if he gets caught. I know that kind of half answers that, but I can't remember when he actually pops up next, because we've been a bit busy with Hank and all these sorts of things. I'm sure it's probably before. Is it before the end of this season? It might be when Ted pops up again.
I honestly can't remember.
Can't remember. So on the City thing, nothing's happened yet. The whole news thing about the charges was in February. February. Which they haven't lost an important game since then, which is a very interesting coincidence. What else was there with that? I don't know what the punishment will be, because what they've done, at least in the Premier League on that scale, has not happened before. There's been things like Juventus have been deducted points and stuff, but they're in a different league with different rules, that those things don't apply the same way. You'd hope it wasn't just, oh, here's 115 charges, now here's a £10 million fine. It's like, what's the point of that? So I don't know what the rule book on that is, because I don't know if the Premier League even knows what the rule book on that is. Like, if someone breaks 115 financial charges, what do you do about that? I don't know if that's even written down somewhere, or if they
No,
ever expected that to happen.
I think yeah, I mean, I think the obvious thing in the case of that, not that this has anything really to do with Breaking Bad, but I mean the obvious case to do in something like that is to actually hit them where it hurts, which is to remove points, I would say. Because like you say, financial stuff, giving them a £10 million fine or something is going to mean nothing.
That would almost be embarrassing.
What you actually want to do is, if they've been cooking the books, you need to remove points from them, because that's the thing that's actually going to hurt them. And arguably it's going to hurt the fans as well, but that should cause us a large amount of outrage for the fans as well, and as things like this should, because they're playing dirty, so
Yeah, one of the problems, though, they've won so many things since the start date of that, which is 2009. What do you do about all those? But I don't know. Again, this has never happened before, so I'm not sure what the rules are on that, because I
No,
don't know if they're in place.
I don't know what they'll end up doing, but
Anyway, but we will see if anything happens about that. That's it for the episode. Thank you very much for listening. By the way, if there are any City fans, let me know if you exist, because they still can't f they fill half their stadium, which is just funny. But if you do support them, let me know, because that would be interesting. Anyway, in the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org. I almost forgot what it was called, which is weird. And podcast platforms for TV, games, films, main night podcast. Check out what we do. We've got coming up. We've got Gaming Talk tomorrow. No football this weekend. That'll be back next week. Another Breaking Bad. We're getting closer to the infamous episode, which is fun. Some other stuff at other points as well. So we'll look out for all those things. You can support us by either listening to more episodes. There's an absolute ton of them, so have a browse around and all that kind of thing. So do that. You can also tell other people word of mouth and social media. Just let them know about what we're doing and where they can find it. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcasts of your options. Look out for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news. If you want updates about the strike or renewals, cancellations, air updates, or film news, that kind of stuff. David runs geektown.co.uk and Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays. David, what's going on over there?
Well, there is news and stuff going up. We've had various bits of news about whilst there is a strike going on in America, there is shows being commissioned in the UK, because the UK is not on strike. So we've got new things coming to the BBC. Sky have picked up some new stuff. BBC has actually picked up. They've turned to Australia. There's a bunch of Australian dramas coming onto the BBC as well. So you can go find stuff about them and. That's all up on the website. That's all on geektown.co.uk. Geektown Radio this week, of course, we talked about Starfield, because I mean there isn't any other games in existence apparently at the moment. Basically it's Starfield, maybe some Baldur's Gate, but I haven't played that, so but yeah, Starfield just everywhere right now, and I am heading up towards 50 hours in and still don't feel like I'm anywhere near like scratching the surface of that game. Also talked about Invasion as well, the Apple TV Plus show, which actually has just come back for a second season, but I've just got through the first season of that. Star Trek Lower
Nice.
Decks, which I think is back. We're recording this on Thursday, and I think it's back tonight, actually. It's either tonight or tomorrow. So that's back for a new season, which is fantastic, that show. And it's a great opening episode of that. So we talked a bit about that. Robert from Entertainment Talk was on the show as well and talked a little bit about Farthest Frontier, which is a new early access game, and Sea of Stars as well. And yeah, a bunch of other stuff. And we did talk quite a lot about the strike. So if you want to know the latest updates and what's going on with the strike as well, we cover that on Geektown Radio episode 394. Five, that is. So you can find that wherever you get your podcasts and on geektown.co.uk.
Nice. So yeah, if you want to hear a bit of a different combination of people, which is Robert and David, check that out. I mean, check it out anyway, because it's useful and good and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, interesting different dynamics there. So go and check that out. What else is there? There's Bex. She's obviously involved in all this as well. She's streaming on Twitch, Trista, B-Y-T-E-S, is where you can go and find her content, and on also other platforms as well. So go and support what she is doing. For us, you can find us on Twitch as well, at the Talk UK sometimes, and YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays as well. I've still got loads of game clips to put up. I've put up some new stuff, so just check out those random bits and pieces and that sort of thing. So there you go. Anyway, thanks for listening. We're almost at that episode, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.